Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 209. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about nostalgia and castles and cake as we go to Eastern Germany. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one coming from the UK, a British businessman has spent £350 to visit every country on Earth in record time. Businessman Kashis Samadar had to occasionally dodge bullets and bombs in some unstable countries to get his name in the Guinness Book of World Records. In the second story, if you've ever been annoyed because when you booked travel online, you weren't told up front what the total fees were, counting taxes and airport fees, then you might applaud the latest decision to fine a travel agency called Ultimate Fares $600,000 for failing to disclose those fees. In another good news item for frequent travelers, a U.S. senator is investigating the airlines for their practices for frequent flyer miles and why millions of frequent flyer miles are disappearing without notice from their customers' accounts. For links to all of those news stories and others, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Eleonora, who's come to talk to us about Eastern Germany. Eleonora, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris.
We actually met through a previous guest on the show who talked to us about the Faroe Islands, which is where you actually are right now. But you are not originally from the Faroe Islands. You are from where?
I was born in Dresden in the eastern part of Germany.
Okay. And when we say the eastern part of Germany, we no longer call it East Germany because it's now one country, but we're still talking about that region that is over there to the east.
It's not a problem if you call it the eastern part of Germany. Just don't call it GDR or something like
sure.
that.
So if I was to go to the eastern part of Germany, which actually it turns out I am in December, what
should
I see? I'm actually going to Berlin, so we're not going to see much of the area. But what should I see if I was to go to that portion of Germany?
Well, of course, Berlin. I guess that is where most tourists go. But there is so much more to see. It really depends on what you want to see. Maybe you are interested in the Bronze Age or the Middle Ages or the 30-Year War or Baroque or World War II or in the GDR, more recent history, or you're a nature friend and like mountains or lakesides or the sea or an area where you can go climbing or rafting to do sports. Maybe you're into art, Baroque architecture, or how about old masters galleries? How about Weimar, where Goethe and Schiller worked?
I'm interested in those things.
Yeah, then it's the place for you to go. So make sure you get out of Berlin for a couple of days.
Okay. So can you design for us what would be a good itinerary? Where would you have us start, and where would we go first, and what would we see there?
I can try. So probably you will be traveling either in the western part of Germany before or maybe in Czech Republic, which is our neighboring country. So I would suggest that you start with the state of Saxony, the federal state of Saxony, which is the most populous state. And the capital of that state is where I was born, Dresden. It's my favorite city, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very historic city. It's medium size, and that is where you can get a lot of culture. So it's not that much a place to be outside or to do sports. That's a place to go to the museums, to go to the famous Semper Opera with a very great orchestra. Then you could move on to some other cities, but I would suggest that you see some of the natural sites in that state, the national park called Saxon Switzerland, for instance.
Let's slow down just a little bit. We hit Dresden and you said museums. What museum should I see in Dresden? What historic site should I see in Dresden?
Okay. My favorite museum is the Old Masters Gallery.
Ah, okay.
A very famous painting from Raphael is in there. I love it. And a lot of other famous paintings. Another must-see is the Green Vault. That's a collection of swords, of jewelry, of coins from the kings from that area. It's just amazing. It's inside the old castle that was restored. You know, it was destroyed in the war.
Okay.
Now it's just amazing. You go inside and enjoy all those jewelries.
So this is from when they were kings of Saxony. So we're before the unification of Germany in Middle Ages or late 1600s or what time period?
Yeah, the Baroque. So from 1690,
okay.
That's when the most prosperous area started to the 1700 somethings.
Now, would Dresden been part of the Hanseatic League?
No.
Okay, that's further north.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So Dresden is very interesting also in terms of culture because it's the point where the Germanic tribes met the Slavic tribes.
Oh, interesting.
So there has been a lot of fighting there for territory.
Mm-hmm.
So there are very many fortifications. Yeah, great places to see. In the mountains, you can go to fortresses that are huge. They could live there for one whole year with more than 100 people and not depend from food or water resources from outside.
Hmm.
It's an amazing area if you're interested in history.
Is there one you would recommend as being the best example of that?
Yeah, my favorite actually is the largest. It's called Festung Königstein.
Okay.
It's in the National Park Saxon Switzerland, so you can do that together.
Okay, so that's just Fort Königstein.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fort Königstein. I can give you the website too. It's huge. They have, I think, the second or third deepest well in Germany or even in Europe. It's like 152 meters deep. It's very impressive, and you have a great view. It's on the top of a mountain, and you have a great view on clear days, even to Dresden.
And that's from around the time of the 30 Years' War? Does that predate that? Or
actually, I don't know when it was started, because there has been something like a fortress there for ages.
Okay, all right.
But I guess it was most important in the 1500-somethings, something mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You were getting ready to head out of Dresden. Anything else we should see in Dresden before we leave?
Yeah, I mean, in Dresden, it really depends on what you're interested in. So you can mm-hmm. do all of that art stuff and older culture things. Like, there's great Baroque architecture there, Italian Baroque, but also a lot of German Baroque. So that's very interesting. There's a great opera house. And also, if you're interested in how to remodel all of these things, because a great deal of the city was destroyed in the Second World War.
Sure.
And now pretty much all of the old town has been rebuilt. So it's very, very nice to see what modern technology can do in such a short time to build up the whole old town. I would recommend you to see the Church of Our Lady, Frauenkirche. Mm-hmm. It was a war memorial in GDR times. I remember there was just a black piece of a wall and thousands of stones lying around it. It crashed in the Second World War, the church. And they rebuilt it in like 15 or 20 years and financed it from donations. So it's really, really impressive. A very beautiful church. And they tried to reuse as many of the original stones as possible. So it's kind of a white and black church. The black pieces are the originals that they could still use.
Hmm, interesting.
The town is mainly structured in two parts. The one that is south of the river is the old town area, and the one north of the river is the new town. It actually is older, but we call it Neustadt, new town.
Mm-hmm.
The Neustadt, that is where all the people go out for clubbing and to the pubs and things like that. So it's a very nice area to go to after you did all the sightseeing in the evening.
Okay. And do you have a favorite pub, club, restaurant, or hotel in Dresden to recommend?
Yes, I have a favorite cafe that I would recommend. It's called Good Bio Food in the Neustadt. Mm-hmm. They serve Ayurvedic food, and it's mostly organic from local produce. A favorite club of mine would be Groove Station, maybe. They have very nice concerts, live concerts. They have bands like nearly every day in the week. Very, very nice music there. Hotel. Well, you know, since I was born there, I never had to stay at a hotel. But for the people of you who know couchsurfing, your listeners, I would really recommend to use couchsurfing because there are thousands of people in Dresden who are members and they have very active city groups. They will take you to the best places in town. That changes every half year.
Sure.
Best club in town. So they will take you to the best places and they are very active, the community. They will help you with your travel planning.
It's interesting to hear you describe a restaurant that the last time I was in Eastern Germany, and this is shortly after it was East Germany, the last time I was there was within months after the wall fell. And you couldn't find anything like that. The only food that you could find at that point was very traditional, very heavy German food, sausages and potatoes and such. So that scene has changed quite a lot since I was there last, so...
Yeah, actually, you can still get that hearty traditional food. Mm-hmm. Just don't go to the restaurants in the old town because those are tourist traps. It's just so expensive. Actually, I have a favorite place where you can get good old German food, and it's a reasonable price. It's also in Neustadt, and you should also check out their beer because they make it just behind the pub or the restaurant. It's kind of pub and restaurant together. It's called Bautzner Tor. Just ask the people on the streets. They will point it out. Everybody knows it. It's a really great place because they tried to keep it as original as possible. So you have pictures of Lenin and things like that in there.
Okay.
It's a very strange atmosphere in Germany, which has now become very modern.
So it has a little bit of what we'd call now nostalgia.
Yeah, well, they don't commercialize it.
Okay.
But you know that term. I didn't know that in other countries. Oh, no.
And for anyone who doesn't know the term, it's basically the nostalgia for the East. Looking back with some fondness on the GDR days.
Yeah, maybe on the funny parts. And the,
right.
You know, it was a bit weird.
Well, there was an interesting survey recently of people in the eastern portion of Germany, and 1/7 said the they would just as soon go back. So there's always some who
No way.
I don't think they were your age.
No, I don't think so.
My guess is they probably weren't even your parents' age. We're probably talking about your grandparents' age. So you were leading us on from Dresden before I so rudely interrupted you.
Yeah, so see Saxon Switzerland, the mountains. I would also suggest a side trip to the Ohr Mountains in the south of the state, but you should only go there probably in winter around Christmas time. That's the place where they make the original Christmas decoration.
Okay.
It was originally a mining area, but in winter there was so much snow they couldn't work. They were stuck in their homes, so what would they do? Carve things out of wood decoration. And that's where you can see how they still by hand manufacture pyramids from wood and all that traditional Christmas decoration that you see all over Germany. It's very, very beautiful to go and see that in the craft shops during Christmas time.
Okay.
The other big place in that state would be Leipzig.
Sure.
Actually, have you been there?
No, I have not.
Okay. They have a very nice memorial, a very nice university. The building is shaped like a book. It's a fairly modern city. It's not as traditional as Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
Another city that I would recommend is called Bautzen. That is the capital of the Sorbs. It's in the eastern part of the state. Do you know who the Sorbs are?
I should. I'm recognizing that, but I'm not able to place it.
Yeah, they are the only really old ethnic minority in Germany that has been there like forever. It's actually a Slavic people. So they have a Slavic language. Most of them are Catholics. They have totally different traditions from Germans. and they live in the eastern part of the state, and Bautzen is their capital. It's a very, very beautiful city. They restructured it and rebuilt a lot of it after the reunification. And they make very, very famous mustard there that's famous all over Germany.
Interesting.
So that would be something to see as well.
Now, you mentioned, just getting backwards for a second here, Leipzig, which is a very modern city now, obviously an older city before. I'm curious, for me, as a student of history, I think of Leipzig as one of the places where Napoleon basically lost a big battle, the Battle of Nations, and was exiled to Elba. Yeah. Is there anything that commemorates that time period, that early 1800s?
Yeah, there's a memorial that we call Völkerschlachtdenkmal. It's a it's a huge memorial. You can see it from miles away. So, yeah, that would be probably it. Apart from that, there's not much left from the old town, but it is a very historic site, also because of the old book fair that they used to have there. They still have it. It's very famous.
Now, I can't quite translate Völkerschlachtdenkmal.
Yeah, it's a very nice German word.
Peoples?
People's war or battle.
Ah, okay. Like, so it's the People's Battle Memorial, basically. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah, it's a very modern city, not that much for history.
Okay.
What else? So I would leave that state after that.
Okay.
And go on to the west, to the state which is called Thuringia, Thüringen in German.
Okay.
You can call it Thuringia. That's where Weimar is.
Okay.
Weimar is famous for Goethe and Schiller, the two famous German poets who have worked there. But also, I would really recommend you to go to the ex-concentration camp of Buchenwald, which is very close to Weimar. It's a very interesting site. They're very well equipped to go there and spend some hours there. Don't spend too little time there, because it's, of course, kind of frustrating when you are there. But rather take some hours to really understand what happened there and see how we deal with it today. Thuringia has also more positive sides, for example, the Harz Mountains, which are like middle-range mountains, not as high as the Alps, of course. And you can go skiing there in winter. There's great hiking there in summer. It's really, really very beautiful. Also in the fall, actually, when the leaves are red, it's not as good as New England, but for German standards, it's very beautiful.
And do you have a specific hike route or village or whatever that you would recommend in that area?
Actually, wherever, just not near the cities, not near the highway. There's a highway leading from the west to the east, or vice versa, wherever you're coming from, through those mountains. So make sure you're not like hiking around the Autobahn. That's maybe not so nice.
Okay.
But apart from that, everywhere. Germans love So there are hiking trails everywhere. Just visit a tourist information center and they will point out the best hiking trails to you.
Okay.
The state to the north of that is called Saxony-Anhalt. It's a rather rural state, and there are not so many people live there now, but still they have some very nice cities to visit, like Halle, for example. They have a university and also the oldest chocolate factory in Germany.
Ah, okay.
And they make the famous Hallekuchen, and I would recommend you to go in there when you visit Halle and the old town, when you've done that, and get yourself some sweet treats. That's very nice. Also, Magdeburg, which is the capital of that state, is worth a visit. They have, I don't know when they built that stuff, but they have a very nice old town, Altstadt. Apart from that, in Saxony-Anhalt, there's lots of rural landscapes. So there's not so much to do, only if you're maybe interested in GDR history, because they have a lot of factories that are connected to the chemical industry. They built up a lot of that there. So if you're interested in recent history, that would be a place to go.
Okay.
Maybe to the east of that is the state called Brandenburg. It's actually the state in which Berlin is. Berlin is a separate federal state in Germany.
Right.
The city and a small area around it, and it is inside another federal state, which is called Brandenburg. And Brandenburg is really beautiful. It's a very flat part of Germany, and they have a lot of lakes. It's a very, very beautiful place to go for swimming or also just to cycle around if you like cycling and maybe don't like cycling up and down hills. It's a very good area to just rent a bike somewhere and cycle around. And don't forget to visit Potsdam, which is in that state near, very close to Berlin. And they have a beautiful castle called Sans Souci.
Without care.
Yeah, exactly. You know French, too.
Well, I've also been there.
Okay, you have been there. It is kind of Versailles, right?
Well, yes. It's interesting. When I was there, and this is not the Sans Souci probably that you know as well, it was, again, in February after the wall had fallen, so nearly 20 years ago. And all of the English brochures, my German is not that good, so I was using the English brochures, were written by the communist regime. And so it was a very different tour. And it was also fairly run down at the time. I would imagine it's in much better shape now than it was then because of...
It is very beautiful now. Actually, my mother was studying there. So they were not allowed to go there. So she would sneak over the wall that was around the area and... She said it was a very nice time after your lectures to relax and hang out in the park of that castle.
Well, yeah, at that time, the brochures were talking about what a bourgeois, terrible, imperialist thing this was, rather than what a historic treasure this is for the people of Germany. So just a very different impression, obviously, at that point from that point of view.
So in Brandenburg, we have Berlin, which is a separate thing. I wouldn't talk a lot about Berlin now. I guess that would be a separate episode.
And we have done an episode on Berlin, just not on Brandenburg and the rest of Eastern Germany. So, yes.
I haven't listened to that yet. So to the north of that would be the last state in the eastern part of Germany called Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. It has a hyphen in the middle, Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. So you can see that it used to be two states, but they are one now. And the people there are very particular, depending on where you are, that they are either Mecklenburgers or Vorpommern. So don't mix that up. But that's the state that has access to the Baltic Sea. So you can go there to go swimming in summer. Actually, well, it's not the Mediterranean Sea, but you can go swimming. The very beautiful Hanseatic cities, Rostock and Stralsund, which is very, very enjoyable and totally different architecture from what you would be used to from the center of Germany.
When I come to Eastern Germany, and of course, when I come back to Eastern Germany in my case, what's going to surprise me?
That the people, though it has been 20 years, still are different. Of course, there are regional differences everywhere, like you have regional differences in the States, but the language and the culture, how people behave, they are rather relaxed. The older, at least, I'd say like from 30s onward, they don't know this hectic lifestyle because they just weren't used to it. So when you go there, even when you are in a big city like Dresden, you feel sometimes like you're in a village. Because the people are so relaxed and nobody's running anywhere like you would know it from Berlin or somewhere else, though the city has 600,000 inhabitants. So I guess that would surprise you, that the people are slower and relaxed and they will say, oh, come on and wait, and we can't do anything about this situation, so let's just wait and see what happens next.
We talked about the food just a little bit when we talked about Dresden. Is there anything that is traditional or not even necessarily traditional, but more popular in Eastern Germany now than I would find in the Western portion of Germany?
Yes, and that's the right question to ask me because I love food. Wherever you go, they have very interesting specialities. My favorites would be from Dresden, try the Christstollen, but only during Christmas or during Easter. Okay. That's a kind of Christmas cake.
Is that the fruited bread?
Yeah, kind of, but I would rather consider it a cake because it's so sweet and so fruity.
That sounds like it might be a little different recipe than a Stollen than my mother makes. My mother is German, and her family would be from what is now that portion of Germany, but they left long ago, sometime in the early 1800s.
Yeah. So they have different kinds, actually. They have Stollen with raisins or with poppy seeds or with almond pieces. I like almond pieces best, but just try each of them. It's really, really good. And you have to make it in August because it has to rest for a couple of months.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And then you eat it Christmas.
So this is definitely a different recipe. Okay.
Good. It really is very delicious. Actually, you know, that region is famous for a lot of cakes. So the next cake would be Baumkuchen, translated tree cake. And it looks like a tree trunk, kind of. And it's dough covered with dark chocolate outside. And when you eat it, you will see that it has rings, you know, like when you cut it. Try Saxon potato soup. It's very different from all potato soups you have ever tried.
Different in what way? Besides better, I'm sure. But
yeah, better. That would be it. But that's very traditional in something Saxon people.
It's sweeter, sourer, hotter, spicier, cheesier. What makes it different?
No cheese.
I'm sorry.
Potato soup. I don't know. It's potato soup, and usually they put some sausages inside.
Okay.
Another thing you should try would be Russisch Brot, Russian bread. Actually, it was Russian bread, but in Russia today, nobody knows it. Nobody remembers it. And they brought the recipe from St. Petersburg to Germany. It's kind of a cookie, but they shape it in form of letters. So it's great to play around. And then they have like the whole alphabet in letters. I think they don't have M and W because they break so easily. The rest would be the traditional German food, a big piece of meat with some potatoes and probably some sauerkraut, which is really good. I really enjoy it. Or some potato dumplings. Yeah. But if you go to Bautzener Tor, that restaurant, they usually have very traditional dishes on the menu.
Okay. I'd like you to think of one day when you were living in Eastern Germany that you thought, thank God I live here. Just what is it about that day that you just so loved that area? Where were you doing? What were you seeing?
It would probably be a day from summertime when when I just finished my lectures in university. I had lectures in buildings that used to be prisons and execution halls where people were killed by the Nazis and in GDR. And then I would take my bike and cycle through the beautiful Altstadt area and cycle over the river, go to the Neustadt part and have a good beer and see how things have changed and that I'm very glad that they have changed.
And you mentioned the beer that's made behind the pub. Is there any particular beer we should try when we're in that portion of Germany?
Well, always try the local beer.
Okay.
Ask for the local beers from the local breweries. And if you try the beer from that brewery, they have a very delicious hemp beer.
Hemp beer. Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
It has a very nice kind of flowery taste or something like that. I don't know. I really love it. Try the hemp beer. It's called Lenin's Hanf. Yeah, maybe it is some nostalgia note to it.
Okay. If you had one picture that makes you the most homesick, and I apologize for this ahead of time.
Well, I'm going back for Christmas, so no problem.
What would it be? What picture sums up that region for you?
I guess Saxon Switzerland, the mountains there.
Okay.
It's sandstone mountains, so there are very interesting formations, and you can go climbing there. I guess a day when I went climbing there and was hanging there on a rock. That would be like the perfect picture for me.
Okay. Any warning you would give before traveling to Eastern Germany? You should really know this before you go.
Yeah. If you are in the state of Saxony, be prepared that some people, when they say yes, they say no. It's not no. I have met so many foreigners.
So it's not nine, but it's no.
Well, nine is nee, and yes would be no. That means yes. So I had people, foreigners, coming to me and saying, oh, the Saxon people are so rude. I asked them for help, and they were like, no, no, no. And they thought it means no, no, no. But it means yes, 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 of course. So be prepared when people say no, it means yes.
That could be confusing.
Yes.
Now, I'm
Apart from that, no. just be friendly.
I'm assuming at this point I would have no trouble getting around in English, should I forget all the German I've learned.
No, actually, you should know some German.
Okay.
If you're not in the big cities. In the big cities, all the young people speak English, and all the tourist places, you have all the guides in English, all the brochures. But maybe if you are in Saxony-Anhalt or in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern and you are a fan of small villages, which are really worth visiting, you should know some German because a lot of old people live there and should remember that they have to learn Russian, most of them.
Okay. That's a good point. Okay.
Yeah. They have picked up some.
So it's still useful to know Haben Sie ein Zimmer frei or something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Best resource for planning a trip to Eastern Germany? Besides you, that is.
If you're on Couchsurfing, the Couchsurfing groups for the regions.
Okay.
Because there you just have to tell them, hey, I'm coming, what should I see? And they will give you a whole list. They are so friendly.
Okay.
Apart from that, I think the usual guidebooks do a pretty good job, apart from maybe some exaggerations.
So what do they cover too much and what do they undercover? You say they do a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think they focus a little bit too much on the old town and also on the Neustadt as a party area, because the whole process of gentrification is a process that worked in the Neustadt area. So it used to be an area where students and artists would be, but it's becoming more posh and posh.
Okay.
That's maybe a little bit exaggerating. So there are other places where you can also go. And they focus a lot on the big cities, whereas I think there are a lot of people who enjoy going to the countryside and seeing smaller traditional villages.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. They pretty much forget that. So if you know German, get a German guidebook because they are really, really good, because lots of tourists who come to that part of Germany are actually from Germany themselves.
Okay. Good to know.
And if not, use the internet.
Okay. Any particular sites you would recommend?
The city sites, probably. Each major city has a city site, and actually each state has an own website where they would give you the best information and also a lot of links.
Okay. As we go to wind this down, you really know you're in Eastern Germany when what?
When you're in a pub with some very relaxed people having a beer and just thinking of all the history and the modern impressions you just got this one day.
Okay.
And trying to compensate that somehow with your beer.
You said there's still some differences between East and West.
Mm-hmm.
What jokes do they tell about the other regions?
You got me. Actually, I'm a really big fan of jokes, not because I don't like the people from the West or whatever. Just because I think it's so funny, so ridiculous. So they use the stereotypes that the people from the West, they're ignorant, they're capitalists. My favorite joke, it's a very mean one. It's not politically correct, so please, who doesn't like such jokes, don't listen now. A man who is very well-dressed comes to Dresden and wants to drink from the water from the River Elbe. And an old woman, she leans out of the window and says, nicht trinken, which means don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, madam, what did you say? I didn't understand you. Like in very posh German, you know, like, oh, I can speak proper German. Then she said like, oh, okay, drink. Because everybody makes fun of Eastern Germany because of their dialect.
Okay.
So when somebody starts to make fun of their dialect, yeah. They would ask you to drink the water from the river. I have two special tips for people who go, on one hand, to Dresden to visit the Hechtfest Festival, which is an alternative art festival where you have art and music from different cultures and food. It's a whole part of the city is shut down. There are no cars there, and the people are on the streets making music and making art, theater performances in summer. It's very, very nice. There's a website, so you can check out the exact dates. It's usually in August.
And you say other cultures. Is this
multicultural? So from different countries.
Okay,
from different
regions. A lot of people who are coming in from the Gastarbeiter program, the guest worker programs, or
Well, actually, there are not so many in...
In Eastern Germany? That's what I wondered.
Yeah, in Eastern Germany, that was more active in the West mm-hmm. and in Western Berlin back then. In Eastern Germany, a lot of Vietnamese people came.
Interesting.
And Cuban, well, you know, the regime.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, also people from Russia a lot. And I don't know which country in Africa, but some country in Africa was
probably
also
Angola would be my guess, but
probably. So they were there, but a lot of them had to leave.
Interesting.
After a lot of Vietnamese people actually stayed, and some Cubans, and a lot of Russians. There are so many Russians and Ukrainians, but a lot of them also came after the reunification of Germany.
Okay.
The other special tip I have would be the medieval festivals and the medieval Christmas market in Dresden.
Okay.
But so the medieval Christmas market is kind of an alternative to the traditional Christmas market. That's actually the oldest Christmas market in Germany. So it's worth going there for the historic part of it. But apart from that, there are just too many people and everything is too expensive. But there's an alternative medieval Christmas market, so that would be worth seeing. And there are medieval festivals all over the eastern part of Germany. I don't know about the west whether they have it, but for some reason the people in Germany love the medieval times and like to dress up like that and make music and theater and using the language from back then. So it's very, very nice to visit a fortress when they have a party like that.
Excellent. And last question. If you had to summarize Eastern Germany in three words, what three words would you use?
That's really hard. Three words?
Three words.
I'll try. Laid back, that's one word.
Sure, I'll give you that as one.
Historic. And humble people, that's one word.
I think I let you get away with four words there. Eleonora, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your love for Eastern Germany.
Thank you very much for having me, and keep on your good work.
Thank you very much. I'm going to skip the internet resources portion of the show today because I didn't see anything that caught my eye. In the comments, there was a comment left on the episode on the Tyrol that said, I'm listening to this episode now and I like the bird song in the background. I wondered if anyone else would notice that Edith had to go outside to record this episode, and if you listen carefully, you can hear the birds in Bristol. Joanne wrote in with a letter that touched me. She said, I've been a listener to your show since 2007, even going to your website and downloading the first episodes that were no longer available on iTunes. I love the iTunes enhanced version, although I haven't figured out how to get decent-sized pictures to show up while listening in iTunes. But that means that I save the listening slash watching for when I am somewhere I can keep an eye on the screen. This means I had a lot of podcasts to catch up on last summer. Your podcasts helped me through many hours of waiting in hospitals as I endured a difficult pregnancy last year. On September 11th, despite being 2 months away from my due date, I knew something was different and made my way to the hospital. I was afforded the opportunity to catch up on the Amateur Traveler as I was put on bed rest in the hospital, but the respite lasted only a few days as I delivered two miracles 3 days later. Thanks for helping me get through a difficult time in my life. Your podcasts are a great trip down memory lane for the places I've been and spark an interest in those I have not yet visited. I used to consider myself a world traveler, but I haven't been further than a couple of hours away by car, if that, since the boys were born. Keep up the good work and God bless, Joanne. I'm always pleased to hear that someone listens to the show, let alone that the show has made a difference in their life in some ways. So, Joanne, thanks for writing. Your letter touched me. Also heard from former guest Sherry Ott, who commented in Twitter this week that it was the episode on Mongolia that led her to do a recent trip to Mongolia, which she enjoyed greatly. So it's also encouraging to know that people listen to the show and take action. So that's terrific. I'm still planning on doing a trip in the middle of March, still trying to arrange the details for the first Amateur Traveler trip to Southeast Asia, and I'm working with a third party to try and arrange that. I hope to have more details in a couple weeks, but it might be into the new year before I have the details. The date to circle on your calendar is March 15th. If you listened to the show before November 30th, remember to vote for the Amateur Traveler for the Podcast Awards at podcastawards.com. I was interested to hear from Jen Leo, who's one of the other co-hosts on This Week in Travel, how much she's been enjoying the new This Week in Travel iPhone app and has just downloaded the Amateur Traveler iPhone app and finds it much easier to use than iTunes. Now, I don't know that I necessarily do, but it was interesting to hear that she did. So remember, if you're interested in that, it is $2 and does help support the show. With that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. Feel free to leave a comment at amateurtraveler.com on this episode or send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Follow me on Twitter at Chris2X or Amateur Traveler, depending on how much news you want. And as always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not.